Yesterday was a day that many in Klal Yisrael marked as a very significant one. It was called Yom HaShoah, and it's a national day of remembrance of the survivors of the Shoah. The reason why I say many Jews is because not everybody, not all Gedolei Yisrael were so fond of this concept of making a special day to commemorate the Holocaust, because they felt that Tisha B'Av is the national day of mourning. It's the day that we say kinnis of many, many different tzaddikim, gedolim, throughout the many tkufas of tragedy that Klal Yisrael experienced, and we sort of have a national day of mourning on Tisha B'Av, and they felt that the Holocaust should not be separated from the rest of the trajectory of this galus, and by making it a special day and a special name, it sort of takes it out of the realm of the general galus experience. But be that as it may, not in any way Chas v'Shalom take sides, but the fact of the matter is that it was celebrated, it was commemorated, and I think it's Kedai, because we're not all together on Tisha B'Av, always, we do have a Tisha B'Av in Yeshiva, but not everybody is generally here. So it's Kedai, I think, to talk a little bit about the Churban in Europe and how it should affect us. Unfortunately, the Holocaust, I don't think, has a very prominent place in our minds, in our hearts. Maybe some of you it does, but I think generally speaking, it's been a very overlooked tragedy, which is really tragic in and of itself because of the fact that it happened not so long ago, within 100 years. You know, history is much, much longer. We speak about events thousands of years later, and here we have an event that actually happened within a century, and we're already forgetting it. And there are some yeshivas and some institutions that make Holocaust studies part of their curriculum, and it's very important to at least be aware of some of the details of the Holocaust, what happened, the years that it happened in, the scope of the tragedy. And it's something that, you know, especially I guess during the Sfira, it's appropriate to reflect upon in this period of Avelos. There's a legendary story, I don't know if it actually happened, but it could have happened, that during the Six-Day War, when the Israeli soldiers recaptured the Kaisel, the Har HaBayis, so there was a chevra of soldiers they were chilonim, and one of them, when they came to the Kaisel, they were crying. They saw a lot of soldiers crying, but they were more frum soldiers. They understood what the Kaisel meant and its historic importance to Klal Yisrael, but this was a chiloni soldier. He had no background. But yet he was crying. And his friend asked him, "Why are you crying? What are you crying about? What do you know about this?" So he says, "You're right." He says, "I don't really know much about it. I don't know what the significance of this wall is." He says, "Aval ani boche al mash ani lo boche." There's sometimes you have to cry because you're not crying. And that's sort of, I think, what the Holocaust is to us, that if we don't cry over the Holocaust, we should at least cry over the fact that we're not crying. We're not in mourning over the tragedy that befell Klal Yisrael. And the question is, how can we personalize the Holocaust? How do we make it something that affects us as humans, as individuals, as Jews? How do we relate to it? It's so vast, it's so large, and we don't have the hearts and the minds to comprehend it. So I saw an amazing vart that I think will help us. In many of the machzerim on Yom Kippur, it's brought that when we lane about the Misas Shnei Bnei Aaron, when we lane about the death of the two sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, so we hear the laning, and it says in the Machzor that if you're Meira Demais, if you cry when you hear about the Misas Shnei Bnei Aaron, then there's a Haftacha Muftach Hu Ki Lo Yira B'Misas Bana B'Chayev. A person has a guarantee that he won't ever, Chas V'Shalom, see the death of his own children. He won't mourn over his own children's death. He'll be able to live a life without having that terrible occurrence that unfortunately lately has been happening very often, that parents are burying children. That won't happen to him because he went and he cried over the death of the Misas Bnei Aaron when he heard the laning on Yom Kippur that Nadav and Avihu died b'karvasim lefnei Hashem. So if he cries, that's a wonderful thing. And the Panimitra Rav asks, what in the world are we supposed to cry about when you hear about the Misas Shnei Bnei Aaron? Misas Shnei Bnei Aaron happened thousands of years ago. I don't know anything about it. I know very little about Nadav and Avihu. I know we don't even know exactly why they died. Very big debate amongst Chazal what exactly their Avera was. We know that they were G'dayle Eilam. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu told Aaron, he consoled Aaron, and he told him that they were greater than us. B'kreve HaKadosh, they were much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than even we were. Imagine Moshe and Aaron, there was no greater G'dayle Yisrael that we know of than Moshe and Aaron. And Moshe said about Nadav and Avihu that they were greater than us. That we know. But how exactly are we supposed to cry? Are we expected to cry in 2025 on Yom Kippur about the death of Shnei Bnei Aaron? It's been a long history. There's been a lot of tragedies since Misas Bnei Aaron. Why should all of a sudden I cry? What does it mean to me, Misas Bnei Aaron? It's sad for Aaron, Vayidem Aaron, but how does it affect me that I should actually have an emotional response? I should start crying over the death of Aaron's children. And Rav Kahneman, the Panovich Rav, says as follows, that this Dar HaMidbar, the generation in which Aaron lived, Moshe lived, and Nadav and Avihu would have taken over, was the greatest generation of Klal Yisrael. We call them the Dar Deya. This was the generation of great intellect, of brilliance. They were the dar that left Mitzrayim. They were the dar that were Makabal HaTayra. They were the dar that were the Eichle Amon. There was no greater generation that saw more Kirvas Olikim, that saw more Nisim, that experienced more Yad Hashem than that dar. And you can imagine that had Nadav and Avihu taken over after Moshe and Aaron died, or had they been there as Moshe and Aaron were transitioning, and we would have had leaders of that greatness, then that generation that they led would have been that much greater. And you know, there's something called a domino effect or a ripple effect, that if that generation would have been so much greater, then believe it or not, we would be so much greater. Because every generation is totally on the generation before. And the greater the generation before, the greater the next generation is. If Nadav and Avihu had been alive, had not died tragically, if they would have been able to lead Klal Yisrael and lead Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, maybe Mashiach would have come. Maybe there would have been a great, you know, ability to be frumer, to be holier, to be more brilliant in Torah because of these two great leaders, because that's what leaders do. Leaders uplift the nation. So the Panimitra Rav says you have to understand that it wasn't just two G'daylim, two Tzadikim that died thousands of years ago, Nadav and Avihu. The fact that they died had a direct effect on us today. We would have been greater people had we had Nadav and Avihu living their life to the extent that they were actually supposed to. And he said the Panimitra Rav, and he brought it closer because the Panimitra Rav was a survivor of the Holocaust. He managed somehow to escape, and he was able to have the ability to not only escape with his son, but also to rebuild Klal Yisrael, really. He's a one-man rebuilding of Klal Yisrael, if you think about it. He built Panovich against all odds. We've spoken about it many times. And because Panovich was built, Panovich was like the citadel of Torah in Eretz Yisrael. Kimat all of the Rosh Yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael, all of at least my generation, meaning when I was in Eretz Yisrael in the 1980s, all of my Rosh Yeshivas were Talmidim of his. All the Talmidim of Panovich were Talmidim of his. All the Talmidim of all the great Talmidim were the Talmidim of the Panovich Rav. All they were Talmidim of Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, of Rav Shach, of the Rav David Parvarsky, of Rav Dessler, of all the great masters, all the great Gedolei Yisrael came from Panovich. So, and in America also, in Europe, so the Panovich Rav almost single-handedly resuscitated and renewed and revitalized Klal Yisrael. So he was a person that knew a thing or two about history and about the importance of understanding the Doros. And he said that we should never think that the tragedy of the Holocaust was something that happened only in that generation. To that generation, sad, you know, those people, Nebuch, they were shechted al kiddush Hashem, and they were sleeping in those terrible bunkers, and they were shot, and they were put into mass graves, and it was a terrible experience for them. That's how I think a lot of us think about the Holocaust. It's like, I don't know how I would have done it through the Holocaust. It's about, you know, we just think about it as their tragedy, but we fail to see it as a personal tragedy. But it was a personal tragedy. He says, never think that it was only for that past generation that were shechted and they were slaughtered and they were tortured, because this great tragedy is dafka for us. We became yesaimim and we remain without them. The Panovich Rav used to say that the difference between a yasim and a dar yasim, a yasim is somebody that loses their parents, and a dar yasim is a generation that loses their children because they are orphaned from but we were both. We lost our parents in the Holocaust, our grandparents, and we also lost a million children. And it was a tragedy that, you know, there would for sure be a kinnis written by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir had it happened in his time. We have kinnis that were written even by Gedolim of our time, Rav Schwab and the Baba Vareba and others, but the Holocaust is not just something that was tragic then. It's something that we have to personalize by realizing that it happened to us. We have no idea, and I have no idea what I'm saying, but we could rest assured that if those 6 million Kedoshim had been alive today, we would be different. We would be different. We probably would be living in a different part of the world also, many of us. But the amount of Chachmei Yisrael that we lost, the amount of Torah that we lost, the amount of Svarim that were destroyed, that were never published, manuscripts that we know about that existed, and the scope of it is not fathomable. And this is something that we should think about when discussing the Churban in Europe, how it wasn't just a tragedy for them, it's a tragedy 1,000 years from today, because that generation would have been so chashuv and so righteous and so important in the scheme of things that we would have all been on a higher level. Just to give you a little understanding, in Lithuania itself, in Lita was one country amongst many countries in Europe that the Holocaust decimated, but before World War II, there were 600 small towns, and each of these small towns had a Rav. And they say that every Rav in each of the 600 small towns were Bekiyim in Shas and Paiskim. If you can imagine that. Bekiyim in Shas, 600 Gedolim, 600 masters of Torah, just in one country alone. And that's what we know about. You know, and then there were Rosh Yeshivas, there were Yeshivas in these countries but just the Rabbanim there were Bekiyim and Shas and Paiskim, 600. Imagine in Poland and in Russia, in Ukraine and in all of the in Germany and in all the countries that were invaded by the Nazis in Mashalmam, and we have no idea how to understand it. If you look at the Mises Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, which we're mourning over in this tkufa of the Sfira, Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, 24,000 Talmidim, and we're still mourning them today in 2025. We're still not shaving, we're still not listening to music, we're not doing a lot of other, not having simchas, chasnas, etc. Why? Because thousands of years ago, 2,000 years ago, the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva were killed. What does that tell us? It tells us that the tragedy affects us, and it's going to affect our grandchildren. For thousands of years ago, a tragedy then affects us today. So a tragedy that happened within 100 years of that scope, it has to allow it, we have to allow it to sink in and to recognize that it's so difficult to understand, but yet we have to cry over the fact that we're not crying. If we're not taking it personally, we're not understanding how deep and how impactful the Holocaust was to us, how different our world would be, then we're missing a major part of what we're supposed to be doing as Jews these days. And it's not just be'echos, it's not just the fact that our lives would have been that much more enriched by all of those millions of people that would have still been alive. But Rav Schwab points out that Bekamas also, people say, you know, there are 6 million Kedoshim. I don't know exactly if that number is so or not. They say it's a little bit more than that. You know, there are Holocaust deniers that, of course, say it wasn't anywhere near that. Afra Lapuma. But Rav Schwab says that it's not an accurate number, not because of, you know, a factual information about exactly how many Jews were killed in each country, in each camp. But he says if let's say the 6 million had not been killed, could you imagine how many Jews there would be alive today in the world? If each of those families had children, let's say, an average Jewish family, a frum family at least, has 5-6 children, I would say, and Hasidim have many more, and let's say on average 5 or 6 children, and they, you know, and all, and that over 80 years, all of that, you know, we would probably have close to maybe 30 million, 50 million Yidden today in the world. Today we have barely, I don't know how many Yidden do we have, 13 million, 14 million maybe worldwide. It's not a lot of Jews, not a lot of people. But if 6 million people were taken off the stage of the world, and you know, had we not had that, Rav Schwab said, we would have so many more people. There would be so many more Yidden. We'd be such a greater nation, Bekamas as well. There's a beautiful story that's brought in Tiferes Shimshon by Rav Shimshon Pinkus. And he says like this, listen to the story. He says that there was a Jewish woman in the Warsaw ghetto that she was very sick. So the Nazis allowed her to be taken out of the ghetto to see a doctor. There was a non-Jewish woman doctor that saw this woman, and she treated her, and she got better slowly in the hospital. And at the end of her stay, they got, I guess, a little close. And the doctor says to this Jewish woman that, I can't send you back to the ghetto because it's no secret that the Nazis are going to liquidate the ghetto. You're not going to be able to survive. If I send you back, you're not going to be able to survive. So the woman says, okay, so, you know, what are you saying? What should I do? Where should I go? She said, you'll stay by me. You'll come back to my house. I have an attic, and I'll hide you in the attic. I'll bring you up food, and we'll ride out the rest of the war, and you'll survive. So the Jewish woman said, you know, I'm greatly appreciative of what you're doing for me, but I have to go back. She said, why? She said, because I have 12 people in my family that are waiting for me in the ghetto for me to return. Can't just like leave them, it's my family. She said, no problem. She says, we'll figure out a way to smuggle all 12 out, and I'll hide all 13 of you in my attic in my house. Unbelievable. One of the Hasidei Umm Salam. And she did it. They figured out a way to smuggle the whole family out, and she hid them in her attic, and for a few years, from the Warsaw ghetto, whenever that was, for until the end of the war, about, I guess, two and a half years, and they all survived the Holocaust. They moved, this Jewish family moved to America after the war, and then at a certain time, like there was, they made like an anniversary party, this Jewish family, and there were now, from the 12 survivors, now there were 200 people in the family. It wasn't that many years later, it was maybe 30, 35 years later. And they invited this non-Jewish doctor to the United States, they paid for a ticket, and she was, of course, the guest of honor at this Suda, and she was like blown away. You can imagine, you know, it's one thing to think that I saved one life. That's amazing in and of itself. To save 13 lives is like really crazy, but to see the taitzais of what you did, to be able to see with your own eyes, you know, ilamcha tira b'chayecha, to be able to see a world, 200 people is, you know, that's a lot of people. And she was able to see what she did, and that sort of is like just one family that exploded from, you know, from 12 to 200. Imagine what 6 million would have become. And this is something that, you know, just to think about a little bit, I don't think we have to be, you know, spooked by memories and, you know, but we have to at least give a little thought to what the Churban in Europe was and how it changed and it affected not only us, but it'll affect our children, our grandchildren. It was one of these events in world history that really changed the trajectory of the Jewish people in a profound way, in a way that really has not been seen probably since the Churban Beis HaMikdash. I want to just end with a story. You know, one of the, there's a lot of great books, if you're interested in reading about the Holocaust, that you could look at. One of my favorites is a book called Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. It was written by a very smart woman, her name was Yaffa Eliach. And the reason why I like the book so much is because it's a beautiful book, but she happened to have interviewed the Blujava Rebbe, who was a great Holocaust survivor who, again, similar to the Panovitcherov and Kleisenberger Rebbe and many others, they survived the Holocaust and against all odds, they managed to rebuild Tyra, Hasidus in America and beyond. The Blujava Rebbe's name was Rabbi Yisrael Spira, and he lost his wife, he lost his family, he lost his community, he lost his Hasidim. He managed to escape, and he rebuilt, in a shtiebel in Borough Park, he rebuilt his Hasidus. And he had a lot of stories to tell after he survived, and she interviewed him, and because she interviewed him, we have a lot of these stories firsthand, and it was, you know, so it's a great contribution just for that reason alone. But there are many stories in the book beyond that that make the book kedai to read. So one of the stories that she brings about the Blujava Rebbe was that he was in a camp called Janowska. Janowska concentration camp was one of the most barbaric of camps, and that's saying a lot because all the camps are really barbaric, but they sort of took it to the next level. I once was doing research about Janowska for one of my books, and I found like a rare picture of a special, a very weird-looking apparatus, like a machine. It looked like a millstone, but like a weird type of millstone. And I was like, "What is this thing?" It was a machine that was designed to crush human bones. They would basically put Yidden in the machine, and they would crank it up, and Yidden would basically be there. It would crush their bones. That's just to give you an example, one example of what was going on in Janowska. It was a horrible, horrible camp. On a cold winter night, a German voice over the loudspeaker said, all the Jews in the camp have to line up and they have to stand at a certain chatzer, like at an open area in the camp. It was like a vacant lot. And everyone has to get out of bed in the middle of the night. It was probably freezing cold. And they were exhausted. They were emaciated. And they all stumbled into this vacant lot and saw something they didn't see until then. There was a large open pit in the middle of the courtyard, like a very big pit. And the voice commanded as follows on the loudspeaker, each of you dogs who values his miserable life must jump over the pit and land on the other side. Those who will miss will get what they rightfully deserve. And he imitated the sound of a machine gun. Now, according to the Blujava Rebbe, it would have been impossible to jump over this pit, even in the best of circumstances. Even, you know, everyone was healthy. You know, I don't know if we would be able to jump over the pit, you know, with a good breakfast that we had and with being strong and healthy, getting a good night's sleep, having nice clothing, everything. But they who were emaciated, they who were probably sick with who knows how many sicknesses, illnesses, diseases, and it was in the middle of the night, and it was freezing cold, and it was physically impossible to jump over the pit. So one by one, the Jews were like, you know, trying to jump. They landed in the pit, and there was a machine gun that summarily killed them. Another Jew jumps into the pit, and now it's getting closer to the Blujava Rebbe's turn to jump. And he was standing next to somebody that he had befriended, you know, in the camp, and they were waiting their turn to jump. And this friend said that, you know, let's not even bother to jump. Like, we're just going to be entertainment for the Nazis. They just want to see us try to jump and make a feeble attempt. Let's just, like, walk into the pit and let them kill us. Like, this is ridiculous. Isn't it? We're not going to be able to jump. So, but the Blujava Rebbe encouraged him to jump. They leapt into the darkness and found themselves alive on the other side of the pit. They actually were able to pull it off. They leapt and they landed on the other side of the pit and they managed to survive. Incredulous at their success, the Rebbe's friend asked him how he did it. So he said, I was holding on to my ancestral merit. I was holding on to the coattails of my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather of blessed memory. He was able to survive because he had all of the chesaves, was able to somehow, a nes happened, and he was able to jump over the pit. But then the Rebbe turns to this friend, who is just a regular person, and he asked him how he was able to, I had chesaves, what was your, how'd you get across the pit? I was holding on to you, he said. And I think this is such a magnificent story because I think it really speaks to what we're talking about today, how the Holocaust represents a lot more than just a terrible event in human history, but it represents the Dairis, the Messiah of the Dairis, and how much that was severed. And how, you know, Klal Yisrael, as amazing as it is not to in any way diminish Klal Yisrael. I think Klal Yisrael's beauty and glory really shines so much brighter, understanding that we were able to jump over the pit of the Holocaust and get to the other side and get to America and Eretz Yisrael and Europe and be able to rebuild and community after community and yeshiva after yeshiva, Beis Yaakov after Beis Yaakov, mikvah after mikvah, Yeshiva Katana, Chadarim, day schools, organizational life. We're amazing. It's simply miraculous the way that we were able to rebuild after the Holocaust. But at the same time, the Yeridas Hadayres, what we're missing is so profound. We have no idea. I have no idea. I'm talking about it. I really don't even know what I'm saying. because, you know, I didn't see that generation. I didn't, but, you know, we see Gedalia Yisrael, you see their Svarim before the war, and you see the level of Kedusha, of Tara, of the Rebbes and the Rosh Hashivas and all the people, the Mesiras Nefesh that you read by the thousands of stories about how Klal Yisrael, you know, were Meiser Nefesh for each other and for mitzvahs and for the Rabbeinu Shalom during these darkest days. And all these people were killed. And, you know, where would we be if we would still have them? And this is something that, you know, I think it's Kedai just to not maybe dwell on and get depressed over, but at least to, you know, cry that we're not crying. To be able to understand that there's a lot more that the Holocaust should represent to us than just like some slogans about never again and lighting some candles. That's very nice, but that's not what the Holocaust is. The Holocaust is the great break in the Messiah that we have, all of the diminishment of you know, the Messiah, the direct communication from Har Sinai to us. And just like the Mises Rabbi Akiva represented one of those great you know, breaks in the golden chain, the Holocaust did the same. And this is something that we have to understand and recognize and be Meir Demais, like the Mises Shnei Bnei Aaron. If you're Meir Demais, even though you don't really understand it, but you understand that we would be greater had it not been for the Mises Bnei Aaron, the Panovich Rav said, we have to understand that we would have been so much greater had the Holocaust not happened, had we had all of those Kedoshim Tahirim. And this is something that, you know, I think gives us a little bit of an ability to take it personally and to learn some of the lessons that, you know, that the Holocaust represents. And Mitzvah Hashem, we should be able to have a heart that breaks and a heart that's sensitive to all tragedies in Klal Yisrael. We've had, unfortunately, others since then. October 7th is one that's so recent and still so fresh. But our heart should be open and sensitive to losses of Yidden, either individual Yidden in the thousands and the millions. But it's something that, as a Yid, it's very important to connect to not just the future, but also to the past. Have a good Shabbos.